listen to your all-out cricket podcast.
Yes, it's a threesome today. It's Alex and Ross, and we've got Ed with us as well.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
No pressure, Ed, but you are going to do the role of two people today.
Yeah.
Bish, bash, bosh, big bash.
Oh, hello. You want to start with that?
No, I don't want to start with it. We're going to talk big bash, listener. We're also going to talk England versus South Africa.
Yes.
Review of the Test Series.
You remember that. We're here to talk about it.
I can make you a few promises about England, South Africa.
Yep.
Nobody here is going to say that England would have bitten their hands off for 2-1 at the beginning of the series.
Yeah,
nobody's going to say that.
No one's going to say that. Are they? Are you going to say that?
Not now.
No, they can't.
I've crossed it off my list. Yeah,
exactly.
Nobody else is going to say that England have still got problems at 2, 3 and 5.
Mm.
Nobody's going to say that.
No, I'm not going to say that.
Well, I can't now. Five.
Again.
And nobody's going to say that, you know, they hoisted the white flag on the final day.
Yes.
Threw in the towel. Any other...
We might as well go home now, guys.
Yeah, if you're going to do all this stuff out, all this tip-top material at the top, all the stuff everyone else has done, I might say, then what have we got left? Is that the noise of a tumbleweed or one man poorly whistling?
I was trying to entertain the listener with a little whistling. Did you enjoy it, listener? It was sparse.
Yeah.
And then we're going to look forward to England versus Australia in the ODIs and maybe a little World Cup action.
Mm.
Well, it's T20, that is.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening in the world of cricket.
Absolutely. We're here to talk about that.
Let's start with England and South Africa.
Mm.
For those of you who have been hibernating over the winter...
Yes. Living under a rock.
England won the series 2-1.
And I'll tell you what, if you'd offered them that at the start...
They'd have bitten your hand off.
That's outrageous, Ed.
It's so easy to do, though, isn't it? You just fall back in there. Come on, Al, give us the other view. No, actually, Ed, you first. You first.
Yeah, really exciting, wasn't it? I mean, obviously they waved the white flag in the fourth test.
Oh, dear.
No, it was, you know... I mean, you guys must have enjoyed it. I mean, everyone must have enjoyed it. The kind of real kind of coming of age of Ben Stokes, probably like the highlight. I don't want to get onto Ben Stokes too much, Alex, obviously, after the roasting you received last time.
But
really exciting. And interesting that the language after the series is mainly about the kind of the possibility for further improvement from the likes of from Cook, you know, saying, you know, we've still got stuff to do. They've done an amazing thing in South Africa, but we can get better.
And there's certain areas in which they can get better. I mean, there are still big gaps at 2, 3 and 5.
No, you've done it. Don't do it.
There we go. But why not? We're here.
I feel bad for number 3 on that.
I do feel bad
Compton,
for number 3.
Compton, I think, did significantly better than the two people he's being thrown in with, which is Hales and James Taylor.
Mm.
I know they all scored 150 in the series, but Compton made a game-changing contribution in the very first innings and averaged 30 over the course of the series. So, it doesn't blow me away, but I just feel it's a little bit unfair on Compo to be chucked in with the other two.
That's very true. I mean, I think the problem, the one who looked the worst and probably ended up as the one most in trouble was Alex Hales. I think that seems to be the case. We can see James Taylor making runs at 5. I certainly can. But the problem is Alex Hales. There was always a question mark coming in. He wasn't in terrific form. And he continued that non-terrific form, didn't he, throughout the series?
He did indeed continue his poor form, which goes to your old bugbear, Ross, which is picking players when they're not in form.
Well, I'm big on form. We're going to talk about a little later on how much time there is for players to actually get into form before the next Test Series, of which there isn't very much. But I think it's important. I mean, there's no reason why, for me, I don't think Ian Bell shouldn't come back into the team should he show fantastic form. I don't think it's the end of Ian Bell. I mean, I may have said it was earlier in another podcast, but now I'm saying it's not.
We're not accountable to anybody.
When people say that's
not what you said last time,
a
Gallic shrug of the shoulders.
There's no all-out cricket ombudsman. I don't have to answer to anyone, do I? Do I have to answer to you, Ed?
Well, let me say, I think the slight issue that England have is they've got a lot of good batsmen. They just don't know which ones are slightly better than the other crop, and they keep throwing them in there, but they've got to give people long enough to really know whether or not they should have got rid of them.
Has Hales had long enough?
For me, no. I understand all of the kind of interpretations of the way that he batted in the series. But beforehand, I thought whoever they picked, they had to give longer than just the South Africa tour. And I'm not saying that he's been impressive. I just think we're getting into a dangerous kind of merry-go-round situation where it's like, well, who do we turn to next? Who do we go to next? I would be interested in seeing Compton open the batting for it. I think England could do with that. So maybe there's something there. But then the problem there is that then Hales isn't a prime contender to bat in the middle order. There are other people then who had come in. So it does all get a bit complicated. You know, arguably, they could have just stuck with Lythe. You know what I mean?
It's Lythe is starting to look pretty good right now. No, he really is, isn't he? You know, distance has made the heart grow fonder. Mm. Carberry, I think, played all five games against Australia on that disastrous series. And he, I think, had the shortest run. Mm. Robson, I can't quite remember how many games, but it felt like a little longer.
He got 200s. He had a decent spell on the team. Long enough for them to know they didn't like his technique, certainly.
Yeah. Then Lythe, who had a longer run again than Hales has had this series as well.
What interests me is the Compton paradigm. Whereby we had a batsman who had scored a couple of centuries and was on his way and then got rid of him. What would be a bigger problem with a bigger betrayal of bringing him back? Would it be getting rid of Alex Hales, whereby we'd be doing the same to him, or getting rid of Compton again? What would be worse? One of them's going to go, I think.
I think they could simplify the top three problem by promoting Root to number three, which I think most other countries he would be batting at number three. And I understand you might not want to move him, blah, blah, blah. He's the best possible option to bat at number three, I think. Yeah, so they could just take the plunge.
Well, Boycott
thinks more options for filling the number four and five slots.
Boycott thinks it should be Compton and Balance, but then your top three is Cook, Compton and Balance. Now, I've got no problem with that because I fall in the George DeBell camp, which is that test matches aren't draws anymore because people score too slowly. It just doesn't happen. So it's kind of a false problem. But Bayliss clearly disagrees. He said that he wants two attacking players, ideally in the top three. So, what to do with this conundrum? I feel bad for James Taylor. Can I tell you why? I pushed this theory out on Twitter the other day and at least one other person engaged with me.
Really? The theory police were also nearly onto you then.
Yeah.
You hear them?
Why do you feel bad?
Come on.
Because I think that Bairstow struggles with the gloves.
Yes.
Put James Taylor at particular vulnerability because I think they'll move Bairstow to five, because he's batting really well.
Yes.
He's just keeping badly. Mm. So maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon.
Soon. Yeah. Sorry, I ruined that. But isn't it, if we're talking about people being picked just because they're good with their hands, you can't get much better in this series than James Taylor. I mean, he was absolutely fantastic. It's an incredible catch.
Somebody very uncharitable at Nets, the captain of my cricket team, said everyone's talking about what a great catch he took at short leg, except he wasn't at short leg. So people have given him the credit as if he were two yards closer. Yeah, I could kind of see that. They were still awesome catches.
And also, rewatch it on YouTube because the celebration of just catching it and just sprinting into the mass of players and right through them out the other side, still with your helmet on. I mean, it's just amazing.
Only
and also,
Pommy
Mbangwa's commentary.
He's the right
build. Sensational. Do check it out.
Is it Pommy Mbangwa?
Yeah. Unbelievable. It's so good.
Okay, let's have a short jazzy break and then let's come back and have a bit of a look at maybe some fixtures that are coming up. See what's going to happen with the old England lineup. I don't want to burden this podcast with content.
Go on.
Information or facts.
Okay.
But the first test against Sri Lanka, which is England's next test match, is on the 19th of May 2016. Mm. The county season begins on the 10th of April. So the maximum a county player playing these games will get is five games, much more likely in reality four because of when the squad announcement will be. Because there's a series of county matches that start around the 14th, 15th of May. So, four or five games for a county batsman. Some of the players in the England team whose places are in jeopardy will probably play those games. Compton springs to mind.
Yep.
We've also got five ODIs before then against South Africa and a World T20. I'm going to assume for a moment that the T20 side isn't going to impact on what the test match team is. I mean, query, that's actually what up for grabs. But basically, there's some players that will get to play those ODIs whose test places are in jeopardy. And we're talking Hales and Taylor and Butler even in particular. Mm. So we've got a kind of county ODI split happening here over the next. And they've both got about the same pool of, well, they've got double the amount of innings in the county, but they're sort of a similar pool. So I think we'll start seeing now what the England management think about the relative weight of runs in both. I think if Hales goes and does well in the ODIs, I think that'll probably be more persuasive than, say, I don't know, Stoneman clocking up two centuries and averaging 65 in the first five games of the season. If you're not already on the radar, I don't think you're suddenly going to get on the radar.
I think that might have been true in the recent past, but from what I've heard from Trevor Bayliss in particular, it does suggest they're kind of looking to widen that pool And, you know, he has acknowledged he hasn't actually seen a great deal of county cricket because he's come straight in. They've basically been playing non-stop ever since he became the coach. But they will look hard, you know, at the county records in the opening weeks of the season. And that is enough time for a batsman to get into form, a couple of hundreds. Mm. You know, if it happened to be one that was broadly on the radar already.
So now we're talking, then, I think, balance. Yep. Is one of these stores, of course, yep. big runs. But this is the Bell conundrum. Yep. If Bell scores big runs at the beginning of the season, is there a risk that people are going to go, yeah, well, that's Ian Bell, he's a class act.
Yeah.
Whereas if Balance scores big runs, they go, oh, Balance is in form, maybe we should pick him. There's an expectation on Bell that he's going to go back to Warwickshire and just absolutely slam county attacks around.
There could be a problem with, unless he averages about 80, then he won't have done a good enough job, given that he's Ian Bell, which was kind of like all his problem all along, partly anyway. I do think James Vince, I do think Alex Lees have got a lot of support behind them, a lot of love in the England camp, because I think that, well, they've both captained the Lions, and I think they want them to do well. I think
what about
they're good characters.
Do you think if Lyth chalked up a couple of centuries?
I think that's perfectly possible, personally.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Having back in, interesting. Mm. So, yeah, Sri Lanka on the way. And then just, you know, let's use that phrase, going forward, which it's very irritating. I think it means in the future.
Okay, yeah.
They're going to go to India. Mm. And then I'm looking at a guy like James Taylor, even Compton with his experience in 2012, and I'm thinking, like, I wouldn't mind them being back, regardless. James Taylor, Compo, India. James Taylor's apparently a good player of spin. You buying that, Ed?
Very much so, yeah. I think his... maybe people didn't see the best of him, actually, in South Africa, but his method is very clear. He has the strongest, clearest plan against spin, I think, of any of that generation of England players. So I would go along with that, yeah.
All right, so I think we've covered the batsmen.
Yes.
I think there are also bowlers involved.
Of course.
We're going to analyse them. We're going to subject them to our scrutiny.
Yeah, I'm going to probably continue along a very similar line with Chris Wokes. And I know people that might take me to task on this again.
Henry's not here, you're fine.
Well, exactly. Well, I didn't want to be right, and indeed I'm not proved right yet. It's far too early for that. But I do see Chris Wokes very much as a sort of filling the all-rounder berth in the future, or maybe even, you know, the stand-in Ben Stokes, if Stokes misses games, that sort of thing.
Which he's going to have to at some point, or
exactly.
He's going to break.
Exactly. So he's a guy, very decent, should enhance his batting, decent bowler. I don't see him as taking over from James Anderson, but time will tell. But it does seem like possibly someone does need to take over from Anderson, because he didn't look his best throughout the series.
No, he didn't. He's got the English summer coming up, which is great. But, you know, I think Wokes is one of those players who will probably, in English conditions, do really well also. Mm. So I certainly wouldn't abandon Wokes off the back of this South Africa performance.
No.
And just generally, the cupboard is well stocked, isn't it? You know, you've got Wokes there. Footit didn't even get a go, but I think from what I heard in the nets and things, he was impressive.
Inside line there, listener.
Yeah.
They've got
Finn. That's why we got him. That's why we needed just
Finn. Was, you know, looked like an absolute world beater, which is brilliant to see. But you got Mark Wood, who hopefully will come back to something after his operation. And then...
Lady Chatterley's lover.
Still got Chris Jordan, Liam Plunkett. There's a good number of fast bowlers around.
Yeah, there are a good number of fast bowlers around. Yeah, this is my theory about the England team. I said it last time. I think it's a good team with very good bowling and mercurial batting.
Quite right.
Just something about the arc of the England team. Cook will be aware, I think, deep down, because he's not stupid, that whilst this is a team in development, he keeps saying, you know, they'll do better and better, we do have to live in the present slightly because of Anderson, and maybe even to a slight extent, Broad. Broad is at peak. And it's just a question of how long peak lasts, and then there will be decline, like the Roman Empire itself. But, you know, Anderson in particular will be very, very difficult to replace. So I think England have to recognise that at this very moment in time, their bowling is looking pretty darn good.
And, yeah, it might not be getting...
It might not be getting much better. You hope that people like Wood and stuff develop into those kind of players, but statistically it's unusual if they develop into the next Anderson. He's kind of a once-in-a-generation thing. So... Fortunately, England are winning, so they're not just using the excuse of we're a side in development, but there isn't too much more development.
No, that's true. I do like this, though. I always think you do have just a slight feeling of the angel of death about English cricket, and saying they're so good, they can only get worse.
You should always be afraid. Do you know, on that question of how good England are, I had an interesting thing today, which was that if they win this summer's two upcoming series, Sri Lanka and Pakistan, then they will hold all of the test trophies for which they compete all nine, I think.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's incredible. Would that put them close to number one in the world, or would it not?
No, well, I think some of that obviously dates back a little while and stuff like that. I don't actually. I say no. It might do. I can't unravel the ranking system.
We can't do that for you here now, listener. But they are ranked fourth or fifth at the moment, I think. It would stand them in good stead were they to win those games. But do they have a chance, Al?
To win against Sri Lanka and Pakistan? Yeah, I really think they do. Yeah, I think England... I think all teams at home are a handful. I think England are a particular handful at home. No, absolutely. I think India is just an enormous challenge, maybe even bigger than 2012 because they don't have Monty and Graham Swan.
Yeah, that's
and that's a whole thing. But no, Sri Lanka and Pakistan, I got tickets in the Lord's ballot for fourth day of England-Pakistan. It's just so... good.
That's
really
exciting.
Wahab Riaz.
Yes.
But I would also be excited to see Mohammed Amir, please.
Of course.
That'd be good. And I hope Yunus Khan will be playing. Yeah. Mm. I mean, he's obviously not in the ODIs anymore. Have him in the test lineup. That'd be lovely.
What's the feeling about the return of Amir? I heard he got booed on his first game. Has there been any other word about how he's going?
Yeah, no, that's probably the last major kind of, set piece incident that I know of. I mean, it's really complicated, isn't it? Yeah. Are we going to get into it?
No, we can't. We might need a longer show to get into it.
Well, I actually wonder, if we do a straw poll right here now, is it complicated? Because I'm very firmly in the, he can crack on now, job done. Mm.
But I suppose just the very fact of the opposition that exists to him, I think, says that there is... something that's complicated.
Yeah, so I'm not denying their feelings.
But you'd never do that, would you? Because you're a sensitive man.
Look, I don't want to write people off for taking a stand against injustice and crime. But you know, I just want to watch it because it's going to be an event.
It is going to be an event.
Exactly. You know, and you've got to.
I'm one of the mob.
Are you one of the angry mob?
Get them out in the stocks.
Yeah.
And pelt them with tomatoes. Okay, let's have a very short break and then bish, bash, bosh.
It's the big bash.
It was the fourth day, maybe the fifth day, of England versus South Africa, and I switched it on. And I accidentally hit the wrong bit of Sky Sports Online, and this apparition appeared on my screen that was... I recognised him for a moment. I thought, who's that tall, strapping figure?
Geoffrey Boycott?
No, it was Kevin Peterson.
Oh!
And I thought, what's going on here? It's the final of the Big Bash. And then in a moment, crystallised in a second, was the great choice, the Crossroads. I found myself in a sort of Robert Johnson experience, you know. And I turned to the devil and I watched the final of the Big Bash. And I'm glad I did, listener. I'm glad I did. It was absolutely cracking. Peterson scored over 70 in front of a very big crowd. And, it was just great. I don't know, did you two get that sort of difficult choice on that day? Your choice of cricketing viewing?
The fact that it's been going on... I mean, in Australia, it's most interesting, isn't it? That when it's been going on at the same time as an actual test series, which has been rubbish.
Yeah.
So, like, the battle for the heart of Australian cricket has kind of been comprehensively won this summer down there. By the T20 side, hasn't it? I think it was that day that you were talking about in particular was one where everyone was kind of like nervously
having a little
hovering
flick.
The thumb over the remote control.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been an extraordinary competition, hasn't it? They've absolutely nailed it.
So it's in the top 10 most viewed leagues in the world.
Is that right?
This series, yeah.
Wow.
They did. I couldn't work it out whether they were either doing average crowds or cumulative crowds over the event. Apparently the highest in the world is NFL. Which is basically sold out massive stadiums every game, but only a short season.
Mm.
But I mean, apparently it was more watched than Serie A.
Wow.
Japanese baseball, it was bigger.
Yeah,
bigger
that's
than
big
that.
Sport.
So this is absolutely huge what's happening over there in terms of the league. And there were English players right at the centre of it, all the way to Luke Wright and Kevin Peterson in particular in the final.
And how did they do, Al? Have you got a rundown of how those players did?
I've got a little bit of a rundown because Fox Sports did a what would happen if an Australian T20 team played, you know, the best of the foreign imports. And I was really struck by how many Englishmen were in the foreign imports. So I'll come to that in 1 second. Just on KP, did a really interesting article in the Telegraph the other day, and he said two things about T20 batting.
Yeah.
First of all, he said that rotating the strike was the key to T20 batting. So you don't get bogged down and feel the need to hit every ball for four or six. Secondly, he said that since he started playing golf, he's changed the way he goes for big hits in T20, and he doesn't keep his elbow high. He's abandoned that element of cricket technique and just hits straight through the ball like a golf swing with his head very still. And then he also said he's available to play for England, but I just mostly ignore that.
He's got to come back, hasn't he, guys? Let's talk about that hot potato. That hasn't been talked about before.
Should we talk about it in the context of the Big Bash? And some of these England players are over there. Some of them will obviously be in the T20 team anyway.
I did see in the semi-final that Rashid came in and scored 14 off three balls. He bashed.
Yeah, I mean, Rashid was absolutely outstanding. So they had Chris... Don't blush, baby. It was Chris Gayle at the top. He scored a lot of runs. Number two was Luke Wright, 280 runs at 35.
Well, on him, it must be confusing if you're a kind of a passing fan in Australia and discover that Luke Wright is not in the England team.
Well, he's been in it plenty of times, hasn't he?
He has been.
He's never been bad.
No, he's always had when he's won the tournament as well with England. So he's done very well. Again, he's the sort of person I could see coming back into the team. Were we not pretty well blessed with a good crop of batsmen?
Kevin Peterson, 323 runs at 40, strike rate of 159. Arguably the best performed import in BBL history.
Hello.
Ed, have you got any feel for the standard of BBL? Peterson obviously says that Big Bash is a high standard now. Mm. He would say that, wouldn't he? Mm.
No, he's got to be right, isn't he? Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of fielding is absolutely top draw, isn't it?
And the bowler's top draw.
Well, I think this has got to be the pretty much the highest standard of T20. Going around, isn't it? I mean, you know, in terms of...
Are there any Indian or Pakistan or Sri Lankan bowlers doing Big Bash? Or is it... I mean, all the bowlers I saw, honestly, were Aussies, but I only watched the
final.
It
was a lot of Aussies. It was a good advert, because at times what the IPL did very well in a sort of less cynical way was bringing on a lot of Indian players you'd never heard of. Oh, sheesh, they're a bit good. And the Big Bash seemed to do the same thing, which is really positive, I think.
Well, we've got Michael Lum, 253 runs at 30. Another consistent performer in the top six, they say. So, Adil Rashid.
Yes.
Adil Rashid, 16 wickets at 14 with an economy of only 6.5.
Oh, that's excellent.
World-class T20, prodigious turn, effective Roggen. Another case for why leg spin is so effective bodes well for the T20 World Cup.
It really does. I think the strongest thing about Rashid was that they just couldn't pick him. They, you know, he's got a really good googly and they never picked it. So, you know, that... puts you a pretty strong advantage in this, isn't it?
And that's brilliant. That's fantastic he did that well. I didn't realise just how well he'd done.
Another favourite of the Poplars, David Willey, 10 wickets at 25 with an economy of 7.28. Something of an unknown quantity to Aussie fans. Quality left-arm seamer, pain for a batsman to deal with, and the umpire's got a pain in their ears courtesy of his appeals. but, you know, Willey and Rashid are in the mix. Guys, where do we stand on, dare I say it, the reintroduction of KP? Morgan would like it?
Well, I think he's been fairly kind of clear without saying it 100% openly that he'd be keen on Peterson.
Experience needed in India. I mean, this was another argument, KP being his own advocate, but in this article he said, you know, it is India.
Yeah.
Specific challenges, you need people with experience.
Mm. At this point, I mean, it's very difficult. Again, going back through certain podcasts, I've said that he's done for a long, long time. Mm. I don't want to contradict myself again, but I kind of would like to see what happened. I mean, you've got to be curious to see how KP would get on in this current crop. Yeah. Whether he'd come back with any sort of humility or whether we would be straight into the same old problems or whatever, if those problems even existed to the extent that they
What's the England T20 first choice batting lineup with KP back?
Mm.
It's Hale's opening.
Mm.
Who was Hale's opening with before? Roy.
Roy. I mean, it's possible he would replace Roy, but then Roy had scored his first 100 recently. He had a pretty good series.
It's just not.
There's just no room. No room at the inn.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I know lots of people would love it, and that's good that people would love to see him. And it obviously is regrettable, but I just can't see it.
Will West Indies be taking Chris Gayle in their T20 side? I assume they. Tune they will.
I hope so.
Yeah, you'd imagine. All right, so yeah, the KP thing, I can understand maybe some reluctance, but how much damage can he do?
Mm.
I mean, this is a famous last word, isn't it? How much damage can one guy do in like 2 weeks?
To the team spirit. Yeah, just parachute him in. Don't talk to him. Just leave it on the field. You know, he doesn't need to practice running with everyone. Or even talking to any of them. Just get him on there doing that big old golf swing and putting balls out of stand.
Cap.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, Bish Bash Bosh, that was quite some tournament. Congratulations to all the England players that went out there and did very, very well.
Yeah.
Cat amongst the pigeons. We'll be back in a second to talk some more short form.
Oh, yes.
England are about to play some ODIs in South Africa, five of them. The aforementioned ODIs. Mm. let's have a short break and some jazz. ODI preview. I've got relatively little to say about it. Mm. Can I just say the only things I know? Just get them out of the way.
Get them out of the way.
And then I'll shut up. Steyn and Philander are still out for all of it. Mm-hmm. It looks like Abbott might be out for the first game. So their bowling difficulties continue.
If Rabada's in the squad, they'll be all right.
Rabada will be in the squad. Oh,
of course.
Tired, though.
I think he's dead tired.
For England, Stuart Broad has been added to the ODI squad. Did Plunkett eventually succumb to his injuries? They brought Plunkett out when he was injured to replace Finn, who was injured.
Mm. And then Plunkett was injured.
And then Plunkett was injured and they put Broad in for the ODI.
Yeah, I think Broad has kind of made clear that he really wants to, you know, wants to play in the World Cup and those kind of things. So he's back in the mix, which is, you know, he's exciting. He's got to be up there, hasn't he?
It's got to be up there, but it's a bit, I don't know, I feel a bit like, really, so soon? I wouldn't have minded a little while longer to look at Rhys Topley, David Willey. Maybe, you know, Mark Wood isn't available still, I understand. Mm. So I just remember Wood, Broad and Anderson in the World Cup. You know, it's still too raw for me.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah. But maybe I can understand that. Although, are we so rigid that we'd be put off by, you know, you've got to be a little bit buoyed by the fact that he's the number one bowler in the world.
He is. Yeah, we don't even pick him
for a Red Bull.
I think that's fair enough. I'm looking forward to seeing David Willey and Rashid on the tour, who've been out and obviously got really valuable experience in the short form of the game.
Disappointed for Sam Billings not being in the ODI squad on this one. He's just in the T20 squad. Mm. I just found that crazy. Mm. I would have had him in the ODI team pretty much throughout, but there we are.
I mean, it's difficult to find. You'll find that Moeen has been put down seven quite frequently there because, I mean, he's had a pretty good bowling record of late in the ODIs, but he's not necessarily the guy to whack the old ball out the park. I think he's probably better at with the new ball. He's had more success, I think, in terms of ODI batting higher up. It's difficult to find people that knock the old ball out of the park. We've definitely got one in Butler, but in Billings you've got another one who does it slightly differently. I think he's a great choice, and I think going forward he will be. Oh, going forward, there it goes.
Yeah. What do we think about Stokes in ODI? Mm. This isn't another tank to Stokes Bay. I understand,
I know what you're saying.
You know, that is a very crowded ODI side.
Is it?
Yeah, it's very, very crowded, and balance maybe means a little less in ODI. But having said that, having another option if a bowler's getting tonked around means more. I think Stokes's bowling is starting to really be the persuasive element when it comes to being picked in the ODIs. I think there are a lot of guys who in a 50-over game can do a Stokes. Mm. I'm thinking Billings and Butler, basically.
Yeah.
And then guys at the top of the order as well, whereas there aren't equivalents to Stokes in the Test arena for what he can do. Are you buying that, or do you still think Stokes is just a cut above when this batting, if you're looking in the 50-over game, guys like Billings, maybe even Butler, can't? Mm. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't want to kind of you know, label the other guys that you're talking about in that sense so that they can't do it. I suppose I just would be keen for us to just embrace the sort of momentum that Stokes has got as an international player and just say, no, you know what, you are great. Let's just back you and stick you in there. I know what you're saying about his bowling, and I think maybe he needs to kind of prove that he's improved when it comes to ODI cricket as well, because I think his bowling has really improved. And I think he just needs to actually have an opportunity to bowl with the white ball now that he has got better, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think he's got around in the past. And I really hope that will be shown in this series. Yeah,
so they're going to pick him, they're going to try him.
I think so. I mean, again, I'm all for rotation, particularly in ODIs and giving people a shot. I do have that feeling that Stokes is just such an explosive player in Test cricket because, you know, you have those, in a way, consistency is more valuable in ODI than anything. If you've got someone that can average 40 in the middle, you can sort of set up an innings for those Butlers and see if one of them can pull it off towards the end. But you do need those people to come up with consistent runs. Otherwise, you just don't make those totals.
Yeah.
I think Ben Stokes is very well used in Test when he can come off or when he doesn't come off, because it's not really down to him. But ODI is such a team game. I wonder whether, you know, a few noughts and they'll grow a bit reluctant with him. But who knows? That might not, well not happen. He may well blast some really good runs and take a lot of wickets.
Well, there's also value in just winning what's in front of you. And Stokes is incredibly in form.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
So you would, you know, keep him going. They're going to have to manage him at some point because they're obviously talking about him for the T20 as well.
Yeah.
They have been talk about these Test players going home. Bayliss really emphasised at the end of the series that a lot of guys were going home. But there are also some really central Test players.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're going to add Broad to the mix too, and he's back in, particularly I'm thinking of Root more than anyone else, but and add Stokes too, where they're really going to have to watch their workloads, basically. Mm-hmm. And they'll have. I think Jordan will get a run in the ODI series. I think they really like him trying out as a death bowler. Both him and Wokes are sort of trying as death bowlers at the moment.
The most incredible, magic over.
The
super over one's ever seen. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. Six in the block hole. No feeling in the rest of the game at all that he was going to do that. And then completely came up with this fantastic performance. You know, it must be some of the best super over bowling in the short history of the game. And so if he can try and replicate that in the rest of the game, then I think it'd be a great comeback for a bowler who I think started off very, very well in all formats of the game.
You know what? I mean, if you pick David Willey and Jordan and Rashid and Moeen Ali and Stokes and even Wokes, you just, every single one of them is practically an all-rounder. I come back to the old bugbear. Pick a specialist keeper. And honestly, a guy doesn't know which end of the bat to hold. Pick Bates.
The worse, the better.
Yeah. The worse, the better,
and
yeah.
And stick him in 11.
Because it's
really
less problematic,
it.
Yeah.
This is the next great revolution.
Do you know what? You are actually echoing...
it's John Hotton.
Jason Gillespie.
Ah.
Because he has said to us in columns and in our feature in this month's magazine, which is about to come out next week, that he thinks that might be the way cricket might go. Yeah, back to real specialist keepers and the more value being put on that. Or rather, that he says that he sees a strong value in it.
Is there a statistic at the moment that measures errors? Because baseball tries to measure errors and the impact of errors.
Yeah, you very much brought that point up on the last pop last.
Well,
if it's worth saying once, it's certainly worth saying again. But it is true. The more time goes on, you do think, when you see in Test matches, drop catches change whole series, you know. And you've got to have the best person in that fielding position. It's so important to have a great keeper.
Do you think that the game against South Africa, that final Test match, wasn't lost really actually with the collapse on the final day, but it was lost with the extra runs that they scored from the drop catches in the first innings? You know, Cook says that it doesn't take very long to lose a Test match. I wonder whether that was the passage of play, actually, where it was lost. Basically, I don't think England were overly awful, and I think it was fair. I think it was Stokes interviewed at the very end said that the pitch had really deteriorated. Maybe not to 101 all out, but that was a difficult pitch by the end. It's earlier in the game
then
where the sort of
runs in the, first
the floor is. I think in a way the 101 at the end is almost like it's a red herring in a way.
Yeah, it's certainly.
So like, it's a white flag, like it's a moral issue.
Yeah.
I just thought that completely.
They just
crazy.
Gave up. They went out there like a war, and they just gave up. They laid down dead. I think you do see catches win matches and lose matches in Test series.
And you really
more than
see
ever.
Final day Test matches completely swinging things around and going crazy over and over again.
Absolutely. And it's the deterioration of pitches, and it's also tired brains, tired legs, you know. I think that happens so much.
We underestimate that all the time. If there's any factor in our analysis over the years, Ross, that we have not given sufficient credence to, it's probably fatigue. Because we just don't do it. We played a two-day game once, and I felt like weeping. And I had nothing to cry about, but I've been playing for 2 days. I can't imagine... back-to-back Test matches.
It was then, though, you were just so happy to be playing a two-day match.
Also,
that's why you were weeping, wasn't it? And I commend that. Well, this has been another All Out Cricket Pod Blast.
Yeah, should we have a little bit of light jazz over the end?
Why not?
Why not?
Ooh.
Jazz.
It's another All Out Cricket Pod Blast. Ed, why don't you talk us through a couple little tidbits from the upcoming magazine?
Yes, I will. It's out next week, next Thursday, and it's great. It's got a really good exclusive interview with Ben Stokes, done and written up by our glamorous editor, Phil Walker.
Oh, yes.
And a really nice section, actually, all about kind of underrated cricketers. Various luminaries have picked out their nominations for this, including like Sangakkara recommending a certain left-arm spinner who he's played with, who he thinks is possibly just as good as Murali.
Really? Oh, very good.
What's the position on, what's the word on the grapevine about Sangakkara and Aaron Harinath? Because I understand that Sangakkara suggested to Aaron that maybe he wanted to look at representation in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, that was true.
Is that being actioned?
Not with any kind of serious chance of maybe Aaron relocating.
Really?
He would have to relocate.
Because he a bit of a breakthrough for Aaron. Famously a guest on the pod.
About a year ago,
in the bleak midwinter last year, had a good season with Surrey.
Did indeed.
Looking forward to seeing more of the same this year.
Absolutely.
Perhaps an underrated player, listeners. Look out for that as the next season looms.
Lovely. Well, that's the All Out Cricket Pod Blast.
That was
show.
It. That
I'm
was
introducing it.
It
at the very end.
Yeah,
hopefully you've
good.
Got this by now.
You've re-energised towards
it's about
the end.
Cricket. And we'll be back at some point, probably after the ODIs.
Absolutely.
So if you want to get in touch about any of the issues that have happened, you know, feel free.
Yep, sometimes we respond, you know. But you do whatever you like. Between now and then, we said it last time, do what you want with your time. You don't need to just be thinking about the cricket publishing, think about work, your family. You can just be doing anything you want.
There are other good podcasts out there, actually.
There are some.
I was thinking today about how good Series 2 of Serial is.
Right.
Everyone
very
enjoying
good. You're
that?
Plugging that. They need a plug, don't they? they need a plug.
All the help they can get.
Listen to that. It's all right. They plug us a lot. So, yes, go, be free. Tweet us.